Bhagavatam. Oh, I'm going to say that after, but okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tadvag Vishargo Janataga Viplava Yasmin Pratisokama Badavyatapi Namanyanantasyagisho Anikataniyach Chinvanti Gayanti Grananti Sarva. That literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, form, and pastimes of the unlimited Supreme Lord is a transcendental creation meant for bringing about a revolution in the impious life of a misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literature, even though irregularly composed, is heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. And Prabhupada explains here that, he says, there is a human society at the present moment is not in the darkness of oblivion. It has made rapid progress in the fields of material comforts, education, and economic development throughout the entire world. But there is a pinprick somewhere in the social body at large, and therefore there are large-scale quarrels, even over less important issues. There is need of a clue as to how humanity can become one in peace, friendship, and prosperity with a common cause. Srimad Bhagavatam will fill this need, for it is a cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization of the entire human society. So that's how important our Srimad Bhagavatam is. So I was given verse 22 and 23, chapter 3, so we'll go over that now. And there's two verses. We can chant together the first verse, and then the second verse, you know, we can do individually. Shamam Hiranya Paridimvanamaya Barha Datu Pravala Natavesham Anuvratamse Vinyasta Hasta Nitarena Dunanam Abjam Karnapalala Kakapola Mukavshahasam. His complexion was dark blue and his garment golden. Wearing a peacock feather, colored minerals, sprigs of flower buds, and a garland of forest flowers and leaves, he was dressed just like a dramatic dancer. He rested one hand upon the shoulder of a friend, and with the other twirled a lotus. Lilies graced his ears, with hair hung down over his cheeks, and his lotus-like face was smiling. So, sorry, Krishna Balaram. All right, next verse. Praya Shuta Prayata Modaya Karna Pura. Yasmin Nimagna Manasastam Atakshi Vandrai. Anta Pervasius Uchiram Parirabhyatapam. Pragnam yata bhimata yo vijahu narendra. Praya shuta prayata modaya kana pura. Yasmini magna manasastam hatakshi vandrai. Anta pravesha suchiram pariyabhyatapam. Pragnyam yata bhimata yo vijahu narendra.
Yasmin nimagna manasastam atakshi vandrai.
ladies. Pragnam yata bhimatayo vijaho narendra. Praya, repeatedly. Shruta, heard. Priyatama, of their dearmost. Udaya, the glorious. Karnapurai, which were the ornaments of their ears. Yasmin, in whom. Nimagna, submerged. Manasa, their minds. Tam, him. Ata, then. Akshirandrai, through the apertures of their eyes. Anta, within. Pravesha, making enter. Suchiram, for a long time. Parirabhya, embracing. Tapam, their distress. Pragnam, the inner consciousness. Yata, as. Abhimataya, the functions of false ego. Vijahu, they gave up. Narendra, O ruler of men. O ruler of men, for a long time those Brahmana ladies had heard about Krishna, their beloved, and his glories had become the constant ornaments of their ears. Indeed, their minds were always absorbed in him. Through the apertures of their eyes, they now forced him to enter within their hearts, and then they embraced him within for a long time. In this way, they finally gave up the pain of separation from him, just as sages give up the anxiety of false ego by embracing the innermost consciousness. I say, you say, O ruler of men, for a long time those Brahmana ladies had heard about Krishna, their beloved, and his glories had become the constant ornaments of their ears. Indeed, their minds were always absorbed in him. Through the apertures of their eyes, they now forced him to enter within their hearts. And then they embraced him within for a long time. In this way, they finally gave up the pain of separation from him. Just as sages give up the anxiety of false ego by embracing their innermost consciousness. So the two verses that I'm going to be speaking on, they didn't have a purport, but I read the chapter in Krishna book, and I also have a couple of commentaries of Srila Kavi Karnapur and Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur that if we have time, then I can read those also. It was really pretty nectar being able to research more about Krishna's beauty. It was just Krishna's super excellent beauty. They describe his mouth always expressing happiness, and I was thinking of how no matter when, even Krishna's, you know, he's fighting Prolambasura, or, you know, he's with Kaliya in the throes of, you know, dancing in his hoods. He always has a beautiful smile, and especially a merciful smile for his devotees. Krishna's eyes are spread like lotus flowers, and he describes that his yellow garments, that they wave in the wind like saffron particles from lotus flowers. I thought that was a beautiful image. And Krishna's beauty is compared to rainfall. Just like when it rains and the rain falls in the grass and the rain falls in the leaves and the sun comes out, and it kind of glistens and sparkles. Krishna's beauty is compared to that kind of glistening. He's always shimmering, always glistening. And also in Krishna book, Prabhupada compares Krishna's beauty to rainfall in the sense that in the heat of the summer, it's just so scorching, and everyone is just like waiting for the rainfall. And when it does rain, the people, they're so satisfied, you know, they're so happy that it's finally come. So Krishna's beauty is compared to that also, in that when we see Krishna, when we come to see the form of the deities, that we feel soothed, we feel satisfied. Also, when one's desires become fully satisfied, when he sees the beauty of the Lord, and I was meditating in the house, you know, sometimes it's such a struggle to even come to the temple. You know, we're so fortunate to be able to do it, but there's so many reasons that we can't come. Some of them very legitimate. You know, you're working or whatever it may be. But when we do come and we stand face to face in front of the deities, Prabhupada described that so many of our doubts and fears are dissipated. So it's always worth the effort to be able to come and look. Krishna's shoulders are compared to the shoulders of a lion, and on those shoulders are placed, you know, flower garlands and necklaces, in particular the Kastuba gem. And I read where on the Kastuba gem is engraved a calf, and I had never remembered reading that before, so that was kind of cool. On Krishna's Kastuba gem, there's a calf engraved on that. And also, they talk about the marks of Srivats on Krishna, and how they're golden, they're also shimmering. And Prabhupada compares the marks of Srivats to a gold testing stone. He says, like a black silica stone, if you take the gold and you test the gold on the stone, and as some of the gold rubs off, that's what it looks like on Krishna's chest, you know, that glimmering. Only, of course, it defies the beauty of the gold testing stone, Krishna's chest. They go on to describe the abdomen of Krishna as being round like a banyan leaf, and they describe it as having three ripples, and when Krishna inhales and when Krishna exhales, these ripples move, and Prabhupada says they're very, very beautiful. And his navel is extremely deep, and it has very deep coils, and it explains that when you look into the navel, It's like the universe has gone into it and has sprouted out of it and is waiting to go back in. So that it appears as if the entire universe has sprouted out of it and yet again wishes to go back. His waist is dark, covered with yellow garments. And his body is filled with symmetry. You know, his feet, his calves, his knees, his thighs. And it goes on to describe the kind of meditation that we should start at the lotus feet of the Lord. And Krishna's body, or Srimad Bhagavatam is compared to Krishna's body, that we should start out with the first two cantos, that those are the lotus feet of the Lord. And we look up gradually to the calves, to the thighs, to the waist, and right up to the smiling face. And it says when we get to the ninth canto, as we're going up, there's a hint of Krishna's beauty. And when we get to the tenth canto, that's Krishna's full smiling face, and it's compared to the rasa dance. Krishna's feet are like two blossoming petals of a lotus flower, and his nails emanate such a great effulgence, they immediately dissipate any darkness in the heart. So Krishna's nails are very brilliant. And when one meditates upon the lotus feet of the Lord, all doubts and fears are vanquished. I was thinking of the prayer that we say every day at greeting the deities. Venun kwanantam aravinda dalaya taksham barhavatansam asitam buddhistam narangham kandarpa koti kamaniya vishesha shobham govindamadi purisham tamahamajamin. So koti kamaniya, that Krishna's beauty, it surpasses millions and millions of cupids. Of course, they're all so beautiful. Krishna's beauty is the most perfect beauty. Also in the Shrisa Upanishad, in the invocation verse, Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udashate Purnasyam Purnamadaya Purnameva Shishate, that the Supreme Personality of God, it is perfect and complete. And because He is completely perfect, all emanations from Him, including this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is complete in itself, and even though so many units emanate from Him, He remains a complete balance. I also read where Lord Brahma, when he saw Krishna, and he's describing Krishna's beauty to a mountain, and he says that Krishna's transcendental beauty mocked the beauty of a coral mountain, and he describes the mountain as being dressed in the sunset, so very, very beautiful. But then he says, you know, Krishna's beauty mocked that beauty of the coral mountain. And he also describes the mountain as having a golden summit, again, extremely splendorous. But he compares the summit of the golden mountain to Krishna's helmet, which is bedecked with jewels. And again, it pales in insignificance. And he describes all the waterfalls and all the herbs and all the flowers, a panorama of flowers bedecking the mountain. You know, beautiful, incredible waterfalls. Like, you know, Pushkar, he's always painting, and so he's always looking at beauty so that he can, you know, recreate that as scenes of the spiritual world. He'll often say, oh, look at this, and he'll call Prithanite, oh, look at this beautiful picture. So this mountain, so many different, you know, colors, so many shades, you know, lavenders and fuchsias and yellows and aquas and so many colors. But again, it's described that the Lord's body bedecked with jewels and tulsi leaves and flower garlands mocked the beauty of the mountain. And Prabhupada comments that any panoramic scene which strikes one with wonder can be taken as a perverted reflection of the transcendental body of the Lord. That one who is attracted to the beauty of the Lord is no longer attracted to the beauty of nature, although he doesn't minimize it. He understands that this beauty is, you know, is part of Krishna, but still the transcendental beauty of the Lord is so much superior. So it was all this beauty that attracted the wise of the Brahmins, the Yajnapatis. They were hearing about this beauty of the Lord from ladies who came to sell their flowers and betel nuts and so many things, and they became more and more attracted as time went on, and they just couldn't stop thinking about him. And this is actually these kind of emotions and feelings that develop in the heart even before one meets the lover. It's called Purvarag, and there's many devotees that have developed this kind of loving relationship. So these ladies were so totally in love with Krishna that they developed very, very strong attachment before they even met him. Prabhupada says that being advanced by thinking of Krishna constantly, they were performing the greatest form of mystic meditation. And just like Sri Vrindavan commented yesterday, it was like they went to Krishna like rivers went to the sea. It said, you can't back up a river, you know, it's going full force. And that is how their love went. Unlike their husbands, the brahmanas, who were very caught up in their sacrifices that they were performing to be able to get material benefit and in order to be able to attain heavenly planets. And this was the problem. Like there's a verse in Nectar of Instruction, Atyahara Prayasascha Prajalpa Niyamagraha Janasangha Chalalim Cha Sadbir Vaktir Vinashati. And in particular, these Brahmins were The problem they were having is niyamagraha. Niyama means rules and regulations, and agraha means attached to. They were so attached to the rules and regulations that they couldn't see the forest for the trees. You know, they were unable to understand who Krishna really was. And their wives, it was very clear to them. So even after the brahmanas realized their folly, they realized their mistake, still Prabhupada explains that, you know, the wives, they went to see Krishna, and still the brahmanas were unable to go because they were afraid of Kamsa's spies. Like, oh, you know, what if, you know, what if, you know, Kamsa's spies see us, and then they'll do this, and then they'll do that. But there was no consideration of like that at all for the brahmanas' wives because they were just too much in love. They didn't care. They didn't care if the spies saw them. They didn't care what the repercussions were. They just were like headlong going for it, you know, going for the mercy and the love. And because of that, they were completely protected, whereas the Prabhupada describes that the brahmanas, because they were so involved in fruitive activity, they couldn't get that kind of mercy. Because, just like sarva dhamma pratyaja momikam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva pabhebhyo moksha samyamasu chaha, you know, the brahmanas' wives, they did abandon all varieties of religion. They were only super just attached to Krishna. So that is our goal, is to be like the brahmanas' wives and be able to be attached to Krishna in that way. I'll just read something really, a really beautiful description of what it was like when the brahmanas' wives saw Krishna for the first time. It says, suddenly they saw an effulgence more beautiful than a dense rain cloud, a mound of kajal, and a bouquet of blue lotus flowers combined. Aho! Upon meeting their faces, Krishna's effulgence turned into kajal to surround their eyes and reflect on their hair parts. Touching their necks, his effulgence embraced them as a garland of blue lotus flowers. Krishna's effulgence turned into tamal flowers to wrap around their ears. When Krishna's effulgence touched their breasts, it rested there as a necklace of blue sapphires. Illuminating their bodies, Krishna covered them with the blue dress of his effulgence. So that super excellent beauty of Krishna, it goes on. But there's one other point that I wanted to talk about that I thought was really important, and that is the fact of a moment's association with a pure devotee. Because these Brahmana women, they didn't have extended time talking with the ladies, but they had what's called, you know, moments of association. So Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one of the great preachers of Srimad Bhagavatam, he says, Sadhusanga, Sadhusanga, Sarvashastra Koi, Lava Macha, Sadhusanga, Sarvasiddhi Hoi. And this verse describes that the verdict of all scriptures, that even by a moment's association with the pure devotee, one can achieve all success. And Prabhupada says, it can't be compared with, you know, merging the Brahma effulgence or being transferred to heavenly planet. It's so much greater than anything like that. And there's so many examples in our scriptures of devotees who, what to speak of ourselves, who have gained perfection from that one moment's association. So this was the benediction that these ladies achieved. And Prabhupada says in the 11th canto that one who learns to associate with the Lord's devotees remains insulated from material contamination. That's why he set up his centers all over the world. That's why he established Bhagavatam in the morning and Bhagavad Gita at night, is so that we could constantly hear and we could become so attached to Krishna and that we could be insulated from material contamination. And he said our barometer for spiritual life could be judged by, you know, are we able to give up material attachments? Are we advancing in spiritual life? So one of the examples of a devotee who became advanced by this lava matra was Narada Muni. You know, Narada Muni was just a child when he was living in the ashram of great sages with his mother, when there was an unfortunate occurrence where his mother was bitten by a snake and she died. So Narada Muni stayed there and he, you know, ate the remnants of the great sages and, you know, heard the great sages speaking. And so he gained perfection and he was able to transfer that association too many others. You know, one was Murari. He got Narada Muni's association and instruction, and so he was able to overcome so much sinful activity and go on. Another person who developed this kind of attachment was Kubje. Explained that Kubje, that she served sages in her past life, and that's why she got the opportunity to see Krishna in the life when she got so much mercy and so much benediction by Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada himself, he talks about his first meeting with His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. And he says, by our first meeting, for a few minutes only, it would have been impossible without it to accept the mighty task of translating the Srimad Bhagavatam into English. He said, if not seeing him at that opportune moment, we could have become big business magnates, but we never would have been able to walk the path of liberation and be engaged in the devotional service of God. So Prabhupada was so grateful for that. And we saw many times as he was speaking how he would tear up or his voice would quiver because he felt such gratefulness for his own spiritual master. Prabhupada also talks about the incidents with Ajamil, and he describes it in the beginning of his life. He got so much pure association, and he became so pure-hearted himself. But then in later years, due to bad association, that he was distracted. And everyone knows the story. He ended up getting, attached to a prostitute. He gave up the chaste, pious association of his wife, took on this prostitute as his wife, had a son named Narayan, and he named his son Narayan. And Srila Prabhupada said that was due to his previous pious activity. That's why he was able to do that. So, you know, it makes you think how important it is. You know, we never know what the future holds, but we do know that right now that we are gaining so much love for Krishna and so much pious activity at the same time. So that kind of association, like there's another verse, Nehabikrama Nashosti, Vayona Vidyate, Swapamahyasa Dharmasya, Mahato Chaite Bayat, that little endeavor on this path can save one from the most dangerous type of fear. So we're so fortunate to be able to have had this love of matra. I was also reading a conversation that Srila Prabhupada was having with Revati Nandi Prabhu, and Prabhupada was talking about this very subject, this love of matra, this one moment's association where he explained that he made our pious activities. Sometimes devotees would ask, you know, it says in the scriptures that you can't do this and you can't do that unless you have a lot of pious activities. So devotees questioned Srila Prabhupada, well, Prabhupada, is that we have so many pious activities? And Prabhupada said, no. You know, I have created your pious activities. So, of course, we're completely indebted for life to Srila Prabhupada for having given us so much this lava matra. And Revati Nandana Maharaj asked Srila Prabhupada, he says, so Srila Prabhupada, does this mean that your books, you know, are giving this lava matra? And Srila Prabhupada said, of course, of course. So now we have so much opportunity, we've had so much opportunity, we have and we will have in the future, to be able to share this association. Every time we give out a book, you know, every time that we talk to somebody at the Sunday feast and give them a little bit of our association. We've even seen with our relatives as we give our association how it can transform them. I know my brother, he saw Srila Prabhupada. I brought him to the temple when he was like 16 years old. And so he saw Srila Prabhupada at the Detroit temple at a couple of different times. And just recently I was talking to him. You know, we'll talk a little bit about Krishna consciousness. I don't want to push it, but he said to me, oh, don't you know? He said, I chant every night, and I say the obeisances every day. So, you know, the benefit is there, the wonderful benefit. I once met a devotee, her name is Kum Kum, and she told me she got a book at the airport in Hawaii. And, you know, she got it, and she just took it back home and stuck it up on a shelf, where it sat there for like 7 years. One day she was sitting down in her living room. She happened to look up at the shelf, look at the Bhagavatam, took it down, read it, and immediately went to the temple and joined the temple, you know, after reading it. So Prabhupada also describes that these books are like deities. You give them to people, you put them in their home, and they will purify your home. They will act. So we have an opportunity now to help with this program that Sri Vrindavan is heading up to, you know, purchase books and distribute ourselves, or purchase books and give other people the opportunity to distribute them, to give them this Lava Matra. Pritch and I went to Shranti Prabhu's house to help with a buy one day, and she was telling us a story of how there was they would have this Banaru music festival, and their young man there got a book from one of the devotees, and he ended up joining the temple, and he said he took the book home. He said, and he read the first page, and he read the second page, and by the end of the second page of the book, he was totally convinced, like, okay, this is it. This is what I'm going to do with my life. And went to the temple and joined the temple. So there's so many stories like that. I was reading one story, and I probably won't totally do it justice, but it was a story of Indrajyumna Maharaj that he related, where he was in France. It's some program, maybe, you know, at a university, some kind of program, and he was giving a class there when one of the devotees came up to him and whispered in his ear, Srila Prabhupada is going to be arriving, you know, at the temple. And he was like, oh my gosh, he just wanted to get up immediately and leave. But he finished the class, and he kind of shortened it and finished it. And then he said, okay, this is what I'm doing. I'm leaving now. I'm going to see my spiritual master at the temple. If anyone wants to come with me, they're welcome to come. And he said there was a general in the back who was dressed in full uniform, and he raised his hand and he said, I want for my family and myself to come. So he was kind of surprised, like, okay. So they got in their van and they followed the devotees and they went back to the temple. And this man, you know, they were in time for a lecture. This man heard Srila Prabhupada's class, and afterwards Indrajyumna gave him a Bhagavad Gita.
I had to drive 15 hours.
Oh, it was 15 hours.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
To Paris to get it.
15 hours, it's no joke.
That's right. And so
it was an admiral in the Navy.
Okay. And so afterwards Indrajyumna gave a Bhagavad Gita, and the admiral said, well, you know, he said, I'm so busy. He said, is there one chapter that you would recommend for me to read? And the admiral said, yes. I mean, Indrajyumna said, yes, the ninth chapter. Told him the ninth chapter. Okay. So then many, many years later, and Indrajyumna said he lamented that he never, at those times we weren't really like onto the idea of getting people's, you know, contacts, you know, getting the information, getting his address, getting some way. And he also often thought, well, what happened to this admiral? You know, I wonder what happened. So many years later, he was doing book distribution, and there was something special happening. Do you remember what it was, Pushkar?
It was in Paris, and there was the mayor, and there was the president of Paris.
There was a lot of big shots there, and the devotees were there distributing books. You know, they like to get in whenever there's a lot of people. And they saw him, and the policeman trying to kick him out. And just then, he looked, and he saw the admiral. He was like, whoa, there he is. And the admiral saw him. And he was like, no, 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 let him go, you know, let him go. So then Indrajyumna went up to speak to the admiral. And the admiral was, you know, they were talking. The admiral was saying, thanking him again for giving them Bhagavad Gita. And he said, you know what, not a day goes by that I don't remember your spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, and that I don't read this ninth chapter. You know, it's so amazing the effect that it has. And sometimes we don't even know, like if Krishna had made that arrangement for Indrajyumna Maharaj to meet that admiral so many years later, he would never have known that. So these books that devotees are giving out in so many different ways, and you know, we're lucky that here we can take a guest up to the book table, they can get a free book. And Srila Prabhupada says, if they read one word, their life is completely changed. So again, we have this responsibility to give out books and to give our association, even though we may think that our association isn't so significant. And I was thinking of how many instances where there's been devotees who have, you know, be fallen away or become distracted on the path. But yet, while they're out doing, you know, whatever they're doing, they can't help but talk about Krishna, because they're still, you know, they're still on the path. They're just a little maybe deviated temporarily. And because they talk about Krishna, people that they meet have, you know, become devotees later. So if we can just always keep this foremost in our mind, this debt that we have to Srila Prabhupada, this unrepayable debt, the only way that we can repay it is by helping other people, you know, come close to Krishna. So I thought I'd stop here, and if anybody has any question or comment or wants to relate something, please do. Yes, Prabhu.
I've got an Iendra story, a moment's association, that at a certain point in Iendra Prabhu's career, I mean, he's just one of the gang, and Prabhupada had come, I guess, to New York, and of course somebody grabbed a mridanga and would lead a kirtan. Well, at this particular meeting, a devotee handed the mridanga to Iendra. And then Iendra, as Prabhupada was, I guess, going to the temple or coming in the airport or wherever it was chanting. And he said that Prabhupada at one point looked over and went, "Jai," and smiled. And Iendra thought, "I please my spiritual master." And that was the beginning of his whole 24-hour kirtans and yada, yada, yada.
Nice.
One moment's association.
I heard a story of one young girl at the time. She got a book, and she just stuck it on the shelf. So a couple of years after, she got a child. She got a son. And when he was about 21 years old, he was just hunting the shelf, and he saw this book. So he started reading the book, and he became a devotee from there, and eventually brought his mother too. So it took like 23 years, but it was effective.
Thank you. Okay, Govinda Mohini.
So I remember one family in my country. They came with a little baby, and they were actually, the wife was more interested in Krishna consciousness, and she was asking all questions, and her baby's name was Bhima. I said, "How come that you come up with this name?" And in the beginning she didn't want to say. She said, "Well, I saw this name, he was the tiniest baby I have ever seen, but his name was Bhima." And I said, "Well, how did you come up with this name?" And first she didn't want to say, and then after we contacted her many times, and I came to her house, and we had a program, and then she actually said, her husband was there all the time, but he wouldn't say anything, and then she said, actually, her husband was initiated, and for some reason, he left the moment, and met her, got married, and then she noticed that he had books and records, and she started asking, "What is it?" He said, "Oh, that's something I was involved before," and she loved the books and the records, and she started asking, "Where are the devotees?" So she brought them back to the temple.
Wow, very nice. Anyone else?
Arivo, buenas. Pushkaras, no losses, please to you. And has Bhagavatam pleased to you? Where have you been all these years? Very nice. I think it's a wonderful class.
Thank you very much.
Beautiful.
I would all to Pushkar. He's constantly reading and studying. It's very inspiring.
Thank you, Mother, for such a very nice class. It comes from the heart, I can feel it. I learned something from your class, too, because quite often I was thinking that due to some pious credits or something that we become to devotional service. But due to Bhakti Tittaswami and Srila Prabhupada's mercy, we get a chance to engage in devotional service. So like you're saying, we owe Prabhupada so much, you know. Thank you for a nice class.
Thank you. All right. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Good time.